Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, surprising you with new topics every single week and jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC. And we are back with your full card recap of UFC 312. And also, we're going to be looking back at the Super Bowl, giving our thoughts on everything that went down. Also going to be giving my review of Severance. That's right, I finally got around to watching the first season, and it did not disappoint as well. We have new UFC news, new pop culture news. We got a lot of fun stuff on today's episode, and I'm ready to dive into it. A lot of recapping, honestly, a lot of me giving my reviews, but UFC 312 left us with a lot more questions than I think answers. There were some highlights, there were some lows, got a lot of stuff for that. And as for the Super Bowl, I mean, some are hits, some are misses, and this one, you know, it's tough to place. This one's really tough to place, just from a personal standpoint, but let's not waste any time. Let's get right on into it with, of course, what we kick off every single new episode with, and that is new UFC fights. And we have a couple of good ones. I do want to start out with the new main event for UFC Vegas 103 going down March 1st. And unfortunately, the number one ranked flyweight, Brandon Royval, is out of action. So in will step the number 7th ranked Asu Almabayev to take on the number 6 ranked Manal Cape. Manal Cape coming off a win over Bruno Silva in dominant fashion. Got around 3 TKO. And as for Asu Almabayev, absolutely destroyed Matthias Nicolau. Actually got him cut from the UFC with how dominant he was over him. This is going to be a clash of styles. And, you know, we have a 21-2 Asu Almabayev who's on like a 19-fight winning streak. He's a pure grappler. As for Manal Cape, we know he's a striker. We know he loves to get knockouts. He's all about the flashy, exciting kicks and punches. So I'll be really curious to see who wins this one. You know, it's tough because Manal Cape's been fighting way tougher competition his entire career, but it only takes one great performance from Asu Almabayev to really up the ante. This is 5 rounds. I don't know the experience for both these guys, but for right now, I'm going to be picking Manal Cape. But odds can always change. You know how it can be. Another main event for you, this one for UFC Mexico. UFC Mexico in Mexico City, March 29th. The main event is the number 2 ranked flyweight, Brandon Moreno, taking on the number 9 ranked Steve Ercig. And, you know, my one question with this fight is, what do we see in Steve Ercig? You know, obviously, he knocks out Matt Schnell and then gets a title shot against Pantoa, goes 5 rounds, but then gets knocked out by Kai Kara-France in round 1, and so we decided to give him another main event. I felt this easily should have went to someone such as, who am I thinking of? Not Amir Albazi. There was someone else at flyweight that was on my mind. Tetsuro Terra. Tetsuro Terra took Brandon Royval to a close split decision, and now he's not even in the title picture at all, but we're giving Steve Ercig a shot. Look, seeing what Brandon Moreno did to Amir Albazi, he's going to do similar things to Steve Ercig, and I honestly think he might get like around 2 or 3 submission, because Brandon Moreno is overdue, for a finish. But I mean, hey, we'll see what other fights they love for this Mexico card. I heard that it was going to be Diego Lopez versus Yair Rodriguez in the men's featherweight division. I guess not. I guess we're going to get Brandon Moreno and Steve Ercig. I won't complain. We're still getting UFC. Here's a banger for you on that Mexico card, March 29th. Daniel Zaluber, who is 15-2, coming off one of the craziest fights I have seen against Francisco Prado, an absolute dogfight. He'll be taking on Elvis Brenner. Actually, was it Daniel Zaluber who took on... Was it Zaluber who took on... Who was the fight of the night, actually? Who was fight of the year that I gave out for at the Sphere? Oh my gosh, I'm trying to think. Espan Rivovic. Was it Rivovic and Zaluber? Oh my gosh, I think it was Zaluber who was in that. It was Zaluber. He was in that absolute dogfight against Espan Rivovic. So yeah, he's coming off a great, fantastic fight of the year category, fight of the year contender, and he takes on Elvis Brenner. And Elvis Brenner, his 2 losses, I mean, to Majdabek Orelbay, and who else did Elvis Brenner lose to? He lost to another super tough competitor. I know Elvis Brenner is super game, but Daniel Zaluber is also such a dog. Zaluber's a hometown boy from Mexico. As for Elvis Brenner, trains at the same gym as Charles Oliveira. This is a fantastic fight. This is definitely going to be on the main card. Lightweight division never disappoints. Here's another one for you. UFC Vegas 105, most likely going to be on the main card April 5th, as Johannerson Brito is back in action after his wrongful loss last time out. Who was Brito? taking on. He was taking on someone. Oh my gosh, I cannot think who it was, but he should not have lost that fight. He takes on Pat Sabatini, who is 6-2, is coming off a nice little win over Jonathan Pierce. Glad he got that one done. These are just two guys that are always absolute killers outside of the top 15. And I gotta go Brito Aldo. Okay, Brito hits hard. Brito has great grappling. And whatever happened in his last fight, he was out of character. I can't even recall who he lost to. It was so stupid. It was so stupid who he lost to. I'm really going to kick myself for not remembering. But Pat Sabatini, submission master. This should be a fun one in the men's featherweight division. And the last fight that we have announced, this one for UFC 314 in Miami, Florida, April 12th. And it is a featherweight matchup between Darren the Damage Elkins back in action against Julian Arosa. Julian is now 8-7 in the UFC with 30 professional victories overall. And as for Darren Elkins, 29-11, 19-10 in the UFC. So he'll be having his 30th professional UFC fight. You know I got it back, Darren Elkins. I mean, Darren Elkins is so exciting. Julian Arosa, kind of having a career revitalization after getting knocked out by Alex Caceres. He's been on absolute bender, and this should be a great clash. I don't know if I'm actually going to ride with Darren Elkins, but for now, it's fun to think that he might win. You know, I like to be optimistic with some of these older guys. We'll have to see, but as for now, we are going to be going with Darren Elkins. Those are all the newest fights that the UFC has allowed us to know about, and I'm excited. I think these are going to be some good matchups, and I'm excited for them all. I think I've been saying excited one too many times. I say we switch up the vocab and get into some pop culture news. That's right. Here are your top 10 new headlines in pop culture post-Super Bowl. That's right. We got a lot of fun ads, got a lot of fun movie announcements. Let's check it out. Kicking off our list, we have something from Kehu Kwan, who was one of the main actors in Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. And he was talking about how he got scared shooting a sequence in that movie, and he started crying, and Harrison Ford said to him, and he said, he'll never forget this. Kay, I want you to remember, I will never hurt you. And what a sweet little Asian boy he was when he almost got killed in that movie. I don't think I've seen any of the Indiana Jones movies before, but it's good to know Harrison Ford seems to be a good guy. I've heard mixed reviews on him, and you never know. With all these celebrities, you never know who are the good ones and who are the bad ones. I like to think some are good, but I'm also a serial optimist. Coming in at number 2, Avengers Doomsday will begin filming in March in England. Ooh, funny. They're going to be in England. Good day, mate. Actually just started Ted Lasso today. I was shown some episodes of it, and now I'm hooked. So I'll definitely be watching some Ted Lasso. But in terms of the England where Avengers Doomsday will begin being filmed, I mean, what are we, just over a year away from the film's release date, and we're just starting filming? I'm intrigued to see how this movie's going to be. I really have had no interest in any of the new movies they've dropped in the last, what came out in 2024? I honestly can't even remember. But everything they're dropping this year, I just don't have too much interest in. We'll have to see. I'm very curious. Number 3, a first poster for Friendship starring Paul Rudd and Tim Robinson. The film follows a man who lives a normal life, but when a weatherman moves into the neighborhood, he becomes obsessed to be his friend. Actually sounds pretty interesting. It's going to be coming to theaters, really. They're going to get a theatrical run for that. Look, I find both of those guys funny, even though Paul Rudd is a absolute millionaire rich man. And I always question if they're good or not. I'm going to be saying that over and over. But I was just like to throw that little context out there. Number 4, a new look at Tom Cruise doing an underwater stunt in Mission Impossible: The Final Reckoning has been revealed. He could only wear the gear for 10 minutes before suffering from hypoxia. I'm breathing in my own carbon dioxide, he said. Tom Cruise is a madman, but luckily he has Scientology to help him with that. Number 6, first look at the Ash Village in Avatar: Fire and Ash. Those that live there are described as the worst side of Na'vi, filled with anger and rage after their civilization was destroyed by a volcanic eruption. And it looks like their base is set in the hollowness of that volcano that exploded. Look, this Avatar movie honestly feels like we're being shown like an alien planet. It's incredible what James Cameron has done. And honestly, as we get these new looks at stills from this movie, I become more and more excited for it. Count me in. Number, what are we on? 7? 7, what should we go with? I got a couple of new things that they're talking about here. Ooh, a first look at Euphoria Season 3, which is now in production. No idea what they're going to do. We've had some deaths on the show. We've had some people saying they're not coming back to the show. Zendaya's coming back. That's all we need to know, but it left on such a cliffhanger. Mind you, that final season dropped when I was a freshman. I'm now a senior, in college, just to give you a bit of context as to how long it's been since we last got some of it. Number eight, what should we go with here? Gosh, Love Hurts, starring Kyahu Kwan, who I just mentioned, currently holds a 19% critic rating, but a 67% verified audience rating on Rotten Tomatoes. I think it's like a rom-com action movie. It's something like that. I don't know. They haven't really done a good job marketing for it. I'm not really that interested. Number nine, I'll tell you what I am interested in. That is the new teaser for the live-action How to Train Your Dragon remake, and it legit looks like they remade the entire animated How to Train Your Dragon movie frame for frame, just with live actors and basically live-action looking dragons and stuff with the CGI. So I'm completely pumped for that. I will so be seeing that in theaters. It is utterly and absolutely right up my alley. I am just thrilled with that. And at number 10, what should I hit you all with? Ooh, they're showing a bunch of Super Bowl stuff here, which we're going to be talking about in a bit. But for number 10, we'll say, I mean, they've been dropping a lot of new stuff for the Thunderbolts. That's what we'll say, that, you know, new teasers for the Thunderbolts, new trailers for the Thunderbolts. And the main thing with the Thunderbolts is that, you know, it's a new team they're adding. But here's the thing, we're adding the Fantastic Four. We already have the Eternals. We have the Avengers. Now we're getting the Thunderbolts. I'm all teamed out. I need a new refreshing superhero movie of some kind. I mean, I like the Guardians of the Galaxy, but yet again, another team movie. Do I need another thing? And I don't know, Thunderbolts, I don't know if I'm too hitched on it. I'll see if Lexi drags me to the theater to watch Captain America. If so, then maybe I'll go see Thunderbolts. But those are all the new pop culture updates you guys need to know of. A lot of fun trailers, but we already knew about that. Fantastic Four, Jurassic Park, which Jurassic World Rebirth looks absolutely phenomenal. We'll have to see as it all comes rolling out. But there is one show I do want to talk about real quick, and that is Severance. Now, I had heard about this show, and I had actually been seeing some promotional things for the latest season, season two up to recent, but I hadn't really known anything about it until a friend of mine recommended I watch it, and let's say I was not disappointed. So, Severance is an American science fiction psychological thriller. It's on Apple TV, created by Dan Erickson, but is actually executively produced and primarily directed by Ben Stiller. You got Adam Scott in this, Zach Cherry, Britt Lower, Tremel Tillman, Jen Tullock, Deechan Lachman, Michael Chernus, John Turturro, Christopher Walken, and Patricia Arquette as some of the main actors and actresses. And obviously, you will know Adam Scott from Parks and Recreation. Of course, he's probably one of the bigger names. Christopher Walken, his name speaks for himself. And John Turturro, you'll know from the Transformer films. He's been in some other types of films. I'm trying to think what Zach Cherry has been in. Oh, he was in the Fallout series. That's what it was. I knew I recognized him from somewhere. But let me just read you the premise from Wikipedia, because that really gives you the best gist of the show. It's basically, actually, I mean, I'm just go off of this. It says, employees working on highly classified projects at the biotechnology corporation Lumen undergo a procedure called severance, which basically implants a device in their head, causing them to lose all memories of the outside world while at work, and vice versa when they're on the outside world. So basically, they live two lives. They have a work life, which is their innie, and their regular life, which is their outie. And it basically, you know, it gets triggered, this severance thing, when they go down an elevator down to where they work. And it basically creates two separated personalities. And the entire theme of the show is that Mark, Adam Scott's character, begins to lose his mind as he uncovers that he has two different lives. His innie does, which is it's a very weird, like, psychological thing. And you begin to see that Lumen is pretty much ran like a cult, and it's very weird, and it's very mysterious, and unfortunately, like most shows, it does build. It does build. So what you're going to see with this is, I'm going to tell you, it starts kind of slow. Okay, 1 through 3, maybe even 4. It's really when you start getting to that 5, 6, 7, especially that 8, 9 run where it really picks up and it ends with such a big cliffhanger. I refuse to spoil it. Okay, I'm going to tell you guys, you got to go check it out for yourself. 91% on Rotten Tomatoes, by the way. Okay, this is a fan-loved show. And, you know, only 9 episodes, so a pretty easy watch for season 1, which is pretty good. But, I mean, it is fantastic. And season 2 has 10 episodes coming out. I think they have 4. Out 5th or 6th, drops this upcoming Friday. I'm probably gonna wait just because I want to see what happens. But this is a fantastic show. And I do think it's always weird when people like Ben Stiller, who I feel like has ins the industry. Like, I feel like some companies, it could actually be like this, you know, where they have something implanted in people's brains where when they leave work, they don't know what's going on. When they're at work, they also don't know what's going on. And also, after watching a full season, I still don't know exactly what they do. And then you have this mysterious thing when you find out there's like different divisions and there's random rooms and there's like dark hallways. It is so just creepy at times, and you never know what's happening, but it's fantastic. It's fantastic. It gets an 8.3 out of 10 for me on the TV show scale, and I'm really impressed with Adam Scott because he was able to get away from the comedy, step into a serious role, and he plays such a good dramatic role here. He truly does, because on one hand, basically all these characters' lives at work are happy and cheerful to an extent, and then you step outside of work and they're all kind of miserable. Now, you only really get to see Adam Scott's character. It's not till we learn about Britt Lower, who plays Helly, about what's really going on. And I mean, for only being a show where you have 4 to 5, 6 characters, it really thrives. And the whole premise to this, I feel like, is so risky, but now that they're actually amping up the marketing that you want to call it, for the show, they actually had the Severance office, like a glass box in the middle of, I want to say it's like it wasn't Times Square, but it was in like some Grand Central Station or something, and they had people walking around. It was like they're doing their daily lives at work. It was very cool, so I encourage you all to check this out. It is super good. You can fall in love with these characters, and it is emotional. It really, this show does a great job of getting you emotionally attached to these characters, which I think is easy to do with a TV show when you only have a secluded amount of characters. So check it out. Let me know what you all think. But I think it's time we stop stalling. No more pop culture, no more TV shows. Let's talk about it. You already know it went down this past Sunday, the biggest sporting event of all time, as they always call it. That is the Super Bowl. So here's my official 2025 Super Bowl recap. I will start off by saying that I don't want to be super negative about the Super Bowl. Okay, I do want to say that. Like, I don't want to be super negative about it, but it was almost just like everything just like failed expectations to an extent. I know that sounds mean, but it's just how I got viewed. I mean, 40-22, Eagles blowout win. I'm always happy to see the Chiefs lose, but the game wasn't even close. I mean, going into the halftime, what was it? 17-rip, 24-zip, I think it was. It was absurd. It was a certain, I mean, the Chiefs didn't even score until the third, couldn't even convert on the two-point conversion. It was just boring. It was just boring. In the halftime show, mixed reviews, I gave it a 4 out of 10. Look, Kendrick didn't do anything really bad. I just don't know a lot of his songs, and, you know, him not performing Mad City, I kind of wish he would have done that. Other than that, kind of boring nonetheless. I mean, it was all about Not Like Us, which I'm just sick of hearing. Commercials kind of fell flat. I mean, we had bingo cards, me and all the boys, which was kind of fun. We had a potluck. We played games. I'd say the environment I was in for watching the Super Bowl was way more fulfilling than anything the Super Bowl actually provided to me. As for the game, you know, the big thing that we're going to talk about, Jalen Hurts wins MVP of the Super Bowl. Player stats, let's start with the Chiefs. Mahomes, 21 for 32, 257 yards, 3 touchdowns and 2 picks. Didn't even have 100 yards at halftime. Really, really rough game from Mahomes. He led the team in rushing with 25. Kareem Hunt, 9 yards. Isaiah Pacheco, 7. Samaje Perine, 8. They were held in check. Xavier Worthy putting up easily the second best stat line behind Jalen Hurts. 8 catches, 157 yards, and 2 touchdowns. Crazy. D-Hop on 2 catches had a touchdown. Travis Kelce held to only 4 catches for 39 yards, and that boy was crying that they lost. It was pretty comical. It was pretty comical. Brian Cook gets a pick from Jalen Hurts. That was the only turnover that they forced. You had Nico Remigo getting 3 kick returns and a punt return. Wow. Good for him. Best defensive player, Drew Tranquil. 7 tackles and 4 assists. Good for him. We had 1 sack from him as well. Also had a sack from George Karlaftis. Other than that, nothing for the Chiefs. They put up 0 points in the first half. 6 in the third. 16 in the fourth. They had a garbage time touchdown. But Xavier Worthy, rookie year, 2 touchdowns in the Super Bowl. 157 yards. Led the team in catches. I think he was the all-star for the Chiefs. They do not three-peat, which kind of makes me happy. But I'm also like, I don't want to see them come back next year. I'm kind of sick of seeing the Chiefs in the Super Bowl. As for the Eagles, they get their revenge. Good for them. Jalen Hurts, 17 for 22, 221 yards, 2 touchdowns, and a pick. 11 carries, 72 yards, and a touchdown. He was phenomenal. 3 touchdowns, almost 300 yards, phenomenal. Saquon Barkley, 25 carries, only 57 yards, averaging less than 2 yards per carry. I just think the main thing is they used him to just run out the clock. And I mean, they're running him right up the middle into blitzes just to kill time. Saquon was never even really in goal line position. He fulfilled his purpose. That's all he did. But still, 57 yards. He breaks the single season rushing, including postseason record for most rushing yards in a season. Congratulations to him. Receiving wise, Devontae Smith, 4 catches, 69 yards, and a touchdown. And A.J. Brown, 3 catches, 43 yards, and a touchdown. Jahan Dotson, 2 catches and 42 yards, falls just like 2 yards short of getting like a 40-yard touchdown in the Super Bowl, which would have been incredible for him. Saquon also gets 6 catches for 40 yards. Dallas Goedert, 2 catches, 27 yards. That's all that we had there. Well, I will say this one thing. Cooper DeJean gets a pick 6 in the Super Bowl. That was so hype. Me and the boys were going crazy. White boys on top. I was seeing that all over Twitter. White boys are back at the quarterback position. It was so, so funny. You also had Zach Bond getting a interception. He also had the most tackles and assists with a 3-4 stat line. I mean, just domination. Domination all around. I actually think you had a fumble recovery from someone. I don't know if they actually put that anywhere, but yes, the Eagles did get a fumble back, I'm pretty sure. 18-3 on the whole year. They win their second Super Bowl in the last 6 years. I mean, good for them. Yeah, it might be 7, actually. I think it's 7, but good stuff for the Eagles. Next time we're in the Super Bowl, February 8th, 2026, where you'll see the Minnesota Vikings. But just demolition. Just a demolition derby from the Eagles. I don't really do too good on picks. I picked the Chiefs just to freaking do it, but I was rooting for the Eagles the entire game, but it's just usually how that works out for me. It was, I mean, commercial-wise, I can't even think of any heater commercials. There was one, so on our bingo cards, we just had Sydney Sweeney on there, like that's all it said, and there was this random commercial where she just popped up like midway through a commercial, and everyone went crazy cheering, which is super funny. You also had a lot of, with a bingo card, you're just looking for commercials. I mean, game-wise, you just didn't miss much. I saw Trump got cheered. Taylor Swift got booed. I saw Anne Hathaway was cheering and everyone was hyped for her. Paul Rudd was sad. Bradley Cooper was happy. Kevin Hart was happy. A lot of celebrities they were showing. But, you know, as for the boys, I mean, we just wanted a good football game and we didn't get that. But happy that the Eagles get it done. I was an Eagles fan all year. You know, I had Saquon Barkley and Jalen Hurts leading me to my 16-league championship. So I'm very happy for those boys. But other than that, kind of a lackluster way to end the NFL season, but the Chiefs did win, so I think it's a positive. That's all we got for the season. We'll be checking with the NHL and NBA a bit more now that this is all wrapped up. But there's one last thing we got to talk about on today's episode, and that's our UFC 312 recap, guys. 7-4 after starting 5-0. We went on a terrible 2-4 stretch, but we did end with the co-main event and the main event being predicted correctly. So let's check things out, discuss everything, because I was able to catch all 12 fights that took place. That's right, one did get canceled, sadly. Actually, no, it was, oh my gosh, it was 12. That's right, we had a cancellation. I forgot about that. Let's dive right on into it. Kicking off the night you just don't kick off the night better than how we kicked off UFC 312. UFC 312 started with so much potential, and I can't lie, it kind of went downhill for a tad, but honestly, it started off really freaking good, and we kicked things off. Quinlan Sakilad taking on Anshul Jubilee, and how about a 19-second knockout to open up the evening? One of the fastest finishes, if not the fastest finish of the entire year so far. I mean, fantastic. Quinlan, how about it? Getting his 3rd career knockout, 6th career finish, improving his win streak to 8 straight wins. And he's 8-1 now. Great debut for Quinlan Sakilad. I mean, just fantastic. Only took 6 punches. What a debut. What a debut from Quinlan. And Anshul Jubilee was complaining about the early stoppage, but I think we have to understand when he got clipped, he went out, and when he was on the ground, he was out for a second, covered his head. It was a perfectly good stoppage, I think, in everyone's eyes, except obviously the fighter who was in that situation. I mean, just a fantastic, fantastic start for the lightweight's career in Quinlan Sakilad. And I mean, dude, he's only freaking, how old is Quinlan? He's only 25. I mean, this dude has so much potential. He'll definitely be fighting later in the year against who? I don't know. I mean, we had a couple other lightweights on this card we could matchmake him with, but Quinlan looked fantastic, and I'm actually so stoked to see where he goes from here. As for Anshul Jubilee, they might cut him. They might cut him from the UFC. Just, I mean, two straight losses, two straight knockout losses. It's not looking good for Anshul Jubilee, but he's an Indian fighter. They only have like two on the roster. I think they might give him one more shot. But Quinlan, man, he hits hard. He starts fast. And how about that? UFC debut only takes you 6 punches to finish your opponent. 19 seconds. It didn't get much better than that when it came to finishes and a performance of the night. An extra $50K for Quinlan. He called it right from the start. He deserved the $50K. And he got it. Great work for him. We'll talk about potential opponents down the line, as I always love to matchmake people that are on the same card. Following that, we had the welterweight debut of Jonathan Milklaff taking on Kevin Jussette, and the dogs went barking as the plus 200. Jonathan Milklaff cashed in spectacular fashion, gets the unanimous decision win over Kevin Jussette, almost knocked him out. In round number one, I thought he freaking had him. I'm going to be honest. I thought Jonathan had him. But Kevin hangs in there, kind of bounces back, gets outstruck 85-67 in terms of significant strikes. Total strikes 89-71 for Jonathan. It was just the Jonathan show. All day, he had his number in another Dana White's Contender Series fighter debuting and getting a victory. You just love to see it. As for Kevin, it's now 2 straight losses. Tough luck, 10-4 now. Nothing much to do for him. It was just a great win. Great win for Jonathan. You know, he had the home Australian crowd on his side. I think he was from Werribee, Australia. So you already knew he was not going to pull off a loss in front of his home nation. Jonathan, great work from you at welterweight. And there's plenty of other welterweights out there for you to fight. I actually have someone I might matchmake you with. You know, I love the matchmake people. As for Kevin, he's kind of in that Anshul Jubilee position. 2 straight losses now after getting some wins on the start of his career. I don't know where he goes from here. It might be outside the UFC, but Jonathan definitely could be taking on a lower level ranked welterweight. I am poised to see what Jonathan has to bring to the table, but this was a pretty entertaining fight, but nothing will top this. I'm going to be honest. Umar Merab was so good. That was such a good fight, but this is my current fight of the year. Rong Zhu and Cody Stanley. It's always these hidden gems on the prelims. You already know there's always these hidden gems on the prelims. And we came in knowing Rong Zhu was a plus 195 underdog. And I actually think that swelled a bit more into the 200 range as he's taking on the undefeated Cody Steele. But this fight, man, this fight, just pure grit. The fact Cody Steele couldn't get a finish, the fact he almost rebounded and finished Rong Zhu multiple times. I mean, this was phenomenal. And obviously, Rong Zhu got 30-27, but this was a 30-27 where it's like every round, these two dudes are just swinging for it. I thought Rong Zhu was going to get finished at times. I truly have no idea how Cody Steele, I mean, that dude truly has a steel jaw. I mean, no one's knocking him out if he's able to reintegrate what he did in this matchup. But it was a phenomenal win for Rong Zhu. And Rong Zhu, I do want to add this context in here. Now has 32 professional fights. He's only 24. Insane. Insane, if you ask me. Including the road to the UFC. He's 5-3 in the UFC. And I mean, I'm so excited to see what he has to bring to the table. Cody Steele, look, your first professional defeat is a fight of the year. Current front runner, okay? Lightweight, you're in for a treat with this guy. And look, Cody Steele, Anshul Jubilee, there could be your next matchup. There could be your next matchup right there. I mean, that's a true proven ground fight right there. But 50K for both of these guys, the best fight of the night by far. I mean, nothing came close. Nothing came close. Like, it just, nothing came close to this. There were some other moments in fights, but nothing came close to how phenomenal Rong Zhu and Cody Steele was. So these two boys, fight of the night. I really want to see big things for these dudes. Rong Zhu, you know, you can matchmake him with, you know, say Tom Nolan, who we're going to mention in a bit. Cody Steele and Anshul Jubilee, I think, would be a fantastic fight there. We'll have to see. But Cody, I know for a fact you'll be back. Only 29. And come on, Rong Zhu, 24. An absolute dog. Following that, we had the debut of who I learned is actually the older brother of Iatopiora. I thought it was the younger brother, but no, the older brother of Iatopiora, and is none other than Alexander Topiora. And he improves his record to 6-1, 6 straight wins as he beats, who did he beat? Colby Thickneys. And Colby Thickneys had a good start, but I'm just going to be honest. The skill deficit between these two was so apparent. Alexander outstrikes him 41-38 significantly, 65-40 total, goes 1-of-2 on takedowns for 5 minutes of control time, and stuffed 8 takedowns. And his one takedown was a full WWE Brock Lesnar suplex over his head. And I think we, as we were watching this fight, we kind of felt that Topura was maybe playing it a bit safe. He was just clearly better than Colby wherever this fight went. -410 favorite for a reason. But he gets it done. Good win for him. And Topura, welcome to the men's bantamweight division. A lot of options for you. At bantamweight. I don't know if they're going to throw him a ranked opponent off the back, but there's always someone like a Damon Blackshear who he could take on. Someone exciting, you know. There's always Mauro Batista if he ends up losing his next matchup. I heard he might fight Marlon Vera. There's just so many names. And Alexander Topura just feels like one of those guys that's going to be ascending the ranks. And don't forget, in his debut, Topura went 3 rounds. It's always good to know that. For Colby, tough debut, but mind you, short notice. You had Volkanovski in your corner. You're taking on a guy who's clearly much better than you. Let's not hate on Colby Thicknesse. I think the UFC should give him another shot. He only signed a 1-fight deal. Look, he was beat everywhere the fight went, but I do want to add, he had it close. He had it close in round 3. Topura was just grappling him and kind of hunting for some submissions. So he did outstrike him 4-1 significantly, if you want to even give him that. Colby, tough loss for you, but Alexander Topura, just as good as his brother. And when you have Topura in your corner, Volkanovski in Colby's corner, it's always comical to see. And I do not think these two dudes are fighting. They were talking about having wine after the fight. I don't know what's going on in the men's featherweight title picture, but I'm excited to see it. After that, Wang Kong back in the win category. All's right in the world. All's right in the world when Wang Kong is getting the victory. Just did what she had to do against Bruna Brazil. And Bruna Brazil didn't even look like she wanted to engage with Wang Kong. This was so one-sided. 30-27s across the board. 103 significant strikes at 31. Wang Kong goes 2-of-2 on takedowns and didn't even need to land a takedown this fight. Outstruck her 30-10 round 1, 35-7 round 2, and 38-14 in round 3 for domination. Only had to stuff one takedown from Bruno Brazil, which wasn't even hard for her to do. Wang Kong, I knew it was a fluke. Knew it was a fluke, absolutely, when she lost to, who'd she even lose to? Was it Victoria Leonardo? It was Gabriela Fernandez. Just lost to a no-name. Okay, she just got caught last time out. We know how good Wang Kong is in the women's flyweight division. And look, I know she's probably going to be taking on someone of lesser competition, but we got Marwell Silva at the bottom. We got Casey O'Neill. You got Ariane da Silva. I'm ready to see her take on someone of ranked capabilities. I think Wang Kong is more than amp to take on an opponent. Bruna Brazil, she's got win-loss her entire UFC run. Another loss here. She's hit or miss on if she balls out or not, but she trains with the Fighting Nerds. You'd think she'd be good. I guess not. Tough loss for her, but it's Wang Kong, for goodness sakes. The Joker, Wang Joker Kong. She's an absolute savage. Absolute savage out there. Wang Kong, beautiful work. Outstrikes her by 73 strikes. 72, I believe. Great work. Wang Kong, we'll see what she has next for you. But she's definitely going to be getting a nice opponent in her next outing in the year. Following that, second to last prelim, lightweight division, Tom Nolan and Vyacheslav Borshev bringing us down to the wire in a striking affair. And just sloppy. Sloppy is the word I'm going to use to describe this, because the fact neither of these guys could get the knockout was just embarrassing. Tom Nolan, 69 significant strikes to 66, 111 total strikes to 92, goes 1-of-8 on takedowns for 2 minutes of control time, and Vyacheslav did get it reversed for 3 minutes of control time in the final round. So, I mean, down to the wire. And the only thing I'm going to say about this is it just looked like these dudes could be getting the finish. It really looked like that. And Tom takes round 1. Vyacheslav takes round 2. Back and forth round 3. They gave it to Tom. Such a tough miss in these close matchups. But I just feel if either of these guys take on anyone of high level in the lightweight division, they're going to get beat. I don't know if Tom Nolan and Quinlan Sakiliad are boys. If not, I think they should fight. If they are boys, Rong Zhu versus Tom Nolan would be absolutely fantastic. And as for Vyacheslav, you got Cody Steele down there. You got Anshul Jubilee. A bounce back win for him would be great. But Vyacheslav isn't necessarily in the best position, I'd say, career-wise, suffering a loss here. His professional record now moves to 7-5. Actually, I think it's 8-5. It might be 8-5-1. Not the prettiest record really not the prettiest record. And taking a loss here, you just hate to see it. Tom Nolan, you know, this is exactly what he needs to do. This was a guy who had so much potential and then shockingly lost to Nicholas Mota. But three straight wins now, little win streak, 9-1. Good stuff for Tom Nolan. Ain't going to be fighting up. No, he does. He's still going to be fighting down, but odds makers had Tom Nolan at +115. Guess he should have been the favorite. Wasn't the most exciting fight, I mean, but I've seen worse. I truly, truly have. After that, we got to the final prelim of the night, and another miss from Zacharias. Gabriel Santos gets a round 3 submission on Jack Jenkins. Good job to Gabriel, though. Truly good job. 5th career submission, 8th career finish. He was the -230 favorite for a reason. Should have rode with him. I really should have, but hey, you win some, you lose some. That's all I'm going to say in terms of Gabriel Santos. Nice little featherweight scrap. I mean, this is your stereotypical. We brought up Dre Anderson Brito and Pat Sabatini. Two great guys on the outside of the top 15 at featherweight. Gabriel, 12-2 now, a little two-fight winning streak. I thought Jack had him. You know, Jack dropped him, and I want to say it was round number 1. I feel like he dropped him in round number 1. Jack dominated him, actually, 28-9 wins round 1. But then round 2, Gabriel was able to land a takedown, really control him, dominate him with the ground and pound. And round 3, gets another takedown, takes the back, gets the submission, did what he had to do. And it's just so tough. So tough to see for Jack Jenkins, who has so much potential. So much potential in the world, and he just can't string together wins. He's now 1-2 in his last 3, but his losses are to Jeppe Mariscal and Gabriel Santos, two absolute warriors in the men's featherweight division. So, look, Gabriel, he's going to be looking up for his next fight. And, I mean, we brought up Jeppe Mariscal. There's an opponent. The winner of Dre Anderson Brito and Pat Sabatini. There's an opponent. Jonathan Pierce, there's an opponent for you. There are so many options at featherweight. Christian Rodriguez is another option for you. Tons of fights for both of these guys. I mean, any of the guys I just listed, Jack Jenkins could take on. It's just tough for Jack Jenkins losing in front of his Australian crowd, but I mean, I wouldn't put it too much past him. Gabriel Santos is legit. The only men to beat Gabriel Santos, Lerone Murphy, David Onama. If you know how good those two are, you know that Gabriel Santos is a tough man to put away. But unfortunately, another miss here. Nonetheless, decent fight. Decent fight. It's just, I feel like I might have been a bit biased since I didn't pick him. Which kind of takes us into the next few fights. Main card kicks off. Jake Matthews, Francisco Prado. I thought Prado would be pretty good in this fight, but just looked like Jake Matthews had that edge. He was 30, Prado was 22, Matthews in Australia. I mean, it was bound to happen. 30-27 across the board. Outstrikes him 68-59. Prado lands 1 of 6 takedown attempts. Actually outstruck him in round 1, coincidentally enough. But the power was just in the hand of Jake Matthews. He was opening him up with some punches here and there. And Jake Matthews is back in the win category. Good for Jake. You know, 2-fight win streak now. Actually, he lost to Morales in 2023, so Matthews getting it done. As for Prado, he's 1-3 in the UFC, but I just feel like he's better than that 1-3 record. I really do. Oh, that fight of the night was against Daniel Zaluber. That's what I was thinking of, which I also thought he might have won, but hey, that's just me. Matthews, good work. Good work. That's all I got to say. You know, with welterweight, I never know who to put him with. And I never really know. You know, obviously, you had Milcap fight on this card. Matthews is in that weird position where it's like he's not ready for a top 15 guy, but he's also not ready for, I'd say, a young, hungry up-and-comer. It's up in the air on who he could take on, but Jake Matthews getting a win in front of his home nation. Good for him. We'll give it to him. He's from Melbourne. Good man. Need a finish, though, Jake. It's been a while. 21 wins now. I haven't seen a finish in a fat minute. Following that, we had probably, I'm honestly going to say, this fight let me down after the first round, but I do want to say props to Rodolfo Bellotto. Props to Rodolfo Bellotto as Jimmy Crew, after a 2-year hiatus, rattles off a 10-8 first round. Jimmy Crute comes out like a bat out of hell, knocks down Rodolfo Bellotto, outstrikes him 27-1 significantly, 59-4 in total strikes, and gets 4 minutes in control time. Obliteration from Jimmy Crute. And then Bellotto outstrikes him 48-46 round 2, outstrikes him 40-33 in round 3, lands a takedown round 3, and he leads us to a draw. We get a little draw here, which I'm not too mad about. I mean, the odds makers had this close. But Jimmy Crute just started this fight so good, it was such a shame that he had to lose her. And Jimmy Crute now is yet to win a fight. This is his second draw in this little 5-fight stretch of his since 2020. It's been so long since Jimmy Crute last won a fight. Heartbreaking. Truly heartbreaking, but this speaks to Rodolfo Bellotto. This truly speaks to Trattore. Trattore Rodolfo Bellotto winning here in the fashion, and not winning here, getting the draw here. I mean, winning back the rounds 2 and 3 was phenomenal to see, and I expect big things out of both these guys in the men's light heavyweight division. They're both going to be getting other opponents down the line. There's always remnants in the men's light heavyweight division, and, you know, there's always a Bogdan Guskov. There's always an Alonzo Menifield. You got these guys right on the verge of the rankings that you could take on. I'm okay with both of that, but sucks to see a draw. Jimmy Crew, you're breaking my heart over here. You truly are. But Rodolfo Bellotto, an absolute animal, fighting back. Following that, we had our second performance bonus, my bad, of the night, and Justin Taffa. I mean, I gave him hope. I put hope in Justin Taffa, and he let me down. Talashon Teixeira runs through him, 8 strikes it took, and he gets the round 1 knockout, shattered his nose. Shattered his nails with a elbow, and Talashon Teixeira is an absolute beast. 8 wins, 8 finishes, the 6'7 heavyweight gets it done in no time. Justin Taffa, he's done. He's done the UFC. You know, we saw he can't grapple. We've now seen he can't strike. It's time for him to go. Time for him to go, and he's the last underdog I ever ride with. Are you freaking kidding me? Talashon Teixeira, the 6'7 giant. I mean, he's got so many options at heavyweight. I'm going to be honest. Put him against Hinad Diaz at 15. Put him at Dontel Mays at 14. Put him against Walter Cortez Acosta at 12. Put him against Tai Tuivasa at 10. Talashon Teixeira is in for a massive matchup coming in 2025. I mean, I saw John Morgan, who's one of the main UFC commentators, interviewers, personalities in the media community, tweet about the official number of UFC fighters on the roster, and one of the smallest ones was the men's heavyweight division with only 30 active heavyweights. Mind you, 16 of those are in the rankings, including your champion, John Jones. So you don't really have that many heavyweights. Okay, 15 outside the division is not a lot, especially with what we've seen, especially since we're probably getting some cuts coming up soon. But Talashon Teixeira, if it's up to me, him versus Walter Cortez Acosta, I think would be phenomenal. Or if you want to keep feeding him knockouts, Dontel Mays, I mean, it's right there for you. Good win for Teixeira. Justin Taffa, fall from grace has been abrupt after knocking out Austin Lane in 2023. He gets out-grappled by Carl Williams and blitz knocked out in 35 seconds. I mean, the skill discrepancy was clearly there, and the size. I really should have just rode with the size. Look, I was going off an underdog pick here. I missed. My bad. I'll be back next time. But now, let's get into the co-main event, because I called Zhang Weili winning, and you already know Zhang Weili gets it done. 35 years old, and she's racking up another title defense in dominant fashion. Still your women's strawweight champion, Zhang Weili, number 2 woman, pound-for-pound domination. 53 significant strikes to 12 over Tatiana Suarez. 232 total strikes to 63. She had 1 registered submission attempt, 11 minutes of control time, stuffed 14 takedowns from Tatiana Suarez, and even gets herself a little 10-8 round in there as well. Round one, Tatiana Suarez takes it, landed a takedown, 3 minutes of control time, despite not landing a single significant strike, gets it done. Round two comes around, doesn't land another significant strike. Zhang Weili wins. Round three, Zhang Weili dominates her even more. Round four, Zhang Weili is really dominating her. And round five comes around, and you're like, Tatiana Suarez is just not meant to be in here, which sucks. I do think the reason Tatiana just didn't look like it is because she was such a one-dimensional fighter. And when you're a one-dimensional fighter and you have success, it's finally brought to light when you take on someone as well-rounded as Zhang Weili. Because Zhang Weili is tough to take down. And the fact she was reversing her, and honestly, it got to a point where Zhang Weili was just messing with Tatiana Suarez. But the win streak at 5, this is her 3rd straight title defense. Zhang Weili is incredible. Truly is incredible. And this is now 3 straight dominant 5-round decisions. I mean, over her last 3 fights, she's only lost 2 rounds. You know, maybe you could give Yan Xiaonan 2 rounds in there, but I'm going to only give her 1 against Zhang Weili in that fight. So 1 round in the last 3 fights is insane. You can even throw in the Carlos Barza fight if you want to. 2 rounds in the last 4 fights she's had. Zhang Weili has officially done it. She's officially done it, guys, okay? She's beaten the number 1 contender, the number 2 contentender, the number 4 contender, the number 5. You can even go down to the number, I don't even know, Carlos Barza's kicked out of the UFC. So, Zhang Weili, it's finally time. Let's have Valentina take on Manon Fiorot. If she gets past her, we can do Zhang Weili versus Valentina Shevchenko. Now's the perfect time. I think we're all ready for it. We're not mad about a double title shot. Don't do it on a pay-per-view. Do it somewhere in Eastern Europe. Do it in China. Do it in anywhere in Asia on a fight night. It would do massive numbers. Think about Zhang Weili won the championship. That was on a fight night. That was electric. We got to do that in China. It's about time we start bringing that back to the UFC. Now, in terms of what I think could be next for Tatiana Suarez, it's retirement or she gets paired up against someone like Mackenzie Dern, Yasmin Lucindo. I mean, truly, Tatiana Suarez looks like this was make or break. Suffers her first career defeat, but it's over. 34, she's beaten cancer. She got a title fight, got to be on a co-main event in Australia. It's not going to get much better than that. She's not going to fight back to a title. I think it's time she cuts her losses and just kind of accepts, hey, you know what? She couldn't even finish me. I had a good career, and that's how I want to go out. Well, we'll see, but, you know, the Mackenzie Dern fight, I think, is what would be next. And obviously, if we don't get Zhang Weili versus Valentina Shevchenko, you have your Jandy Doba and Jan Chonin fighting. That's going to be your next title. A title fight right there. Wins pound for pound. Tatiana's currently 10th. I'd probably drop her down a couple rungs or two. And Zhang Weili and Valentina, you know, they could always jump over each other for women's pound for pound. I don't think it really matters. I'm going to just keep it out as with Valentina. But we'll see once the rankings update. But then we got to the main event. And unfortunately, when we're talking about title fights for the year, when we're talking about, how do I put it, main events for pay-per-views, this is probably going to be near the bottom as Driscus du Plessis just exposed Sean Strickland in this fight. Just domination from Driscus du Plessis. And props to him. Props to him. He knew what he had to do. He went out and proved himself. And Driscus du Plessis is and still your middleweight champion. He drops one round on one judge's scorecard. Everyone else, including myself, had it 50-45. 147 strikes, 228 significantly, 149 to 128 for Driscus. And he just landed one little takedown, which Sean was easily able to get back up from in round number three. But, you know, Driscus outstruck him by 4 in round one, by 2 in round two, by 14 in round three. Got outstruck by Sean in round four. Yet Sean Strickland actually got his nose broken and he readjusted it in round four. What a badass. He gets outstruck in round five. Driscus just poured it on. Sean didn't even look like he wanted to be in there. You know, that killer instinct I saw from him against Driscus in that first fight was just not there. I don't know what was going on with Sean. I think we all knew he had a staph infection. I truly believe that played a role. I don't know if he's going to bring that up or all, but Driscus, man, 11 straight wins. How about 2 title defenses? Are you kidding me? Driscus is an absolute animal. 23-2 record. Phenomenal work. Phenomenal work from Driscus. He has proven himself, but now he takes on the toughest competitor. I mean, this is, you know, we're talking about Tom Aspinall against John Jones. Meh. Magomed Ankalaev, Alex Pereira. Meh. Shavkat Rakhmonov, Bilal. Armin versus Islam. I mean, no one really anywhere. It's Khamzat Chimaev versus Driscus du Plessis. The boars, the wolf. I mean, this is going to be a phenomenal main event when this takes place in the summer. Maybe in Abu Dhabi, maybe in Paris. I don't know. But you're hands down going to be getting Khamzat Chimaev versus Driscus du Plessis. And I don't know. I'm going to be honest, on the feet, I'm taking du Plessis, but it's just going to come down to, this is the only thing with Khamzat, if you can survive round one, I'm giving it to Driscus. I truly am, but see what he did to Robert. I mean, it's going to be so tricky, but that's going to be a phenomenal fight. Huge DDP fan. I've been back in DDP since he joined the UFC. I'm excited to see what's next for DDP when he takes on Khamzat Chimaev. And even if Khamzat isn't available, you got Nazarene Imavov. So you got two great fights coming up for Driscus du Plessis in terms of the middleweight title picture. He was talking about fighting Alex Pereira, but that's just what you do in showbiz. You just call out the biggest name guy that you can run your eyes across. Now, as for Sean Strickland, you know, 1-2 in his last three, both those losses to Driscus. 29-7 professional record. I don't know what he does from here. You know, there's always the Nazarene Imavov rematch. There's always Kyle Barallo. There's, you know, if Gregory Rodriguez beats Jared Cannonier, that could be a next fight. The winner of Marvin Vettori and Roman Dolidze, there's a lot of options there. There just really isn't anything for Sean to do. He was calling out Robert Whittaker for some reason. That fight's not going to take place. But if it was up to me, you know, Sean either, I don't know, Sean's reached that point where it's like he's now lost twice to this champion. Put on a lackluster fight against Paul Costa. I almost feel like it's time for retirement. He's not going to retire. He's an absolute draw, but it's not going to get easier from here. The Nazarene Imavov he's going to fight is 10 times better than the one he fought in 2023. Kyle Barallo is getting a top five opponent next fight up. And if it's not Adesanya, it's going to be Sean Strickland. So Sean is going to have to fight one of these young, hungry up-and-comers joining the division. And Jesus Duplessis is going to take on easily the scariest title challenger out of all 11 divisions we have in the UFC. UFC 312, it gets a 5 out of 10 for me. 5 out of 10 for me. As I go through the card, you know, it started so strong. You get your 19-second knockout. Milkaff having his debut against Kevin Doucette was actually pretty entertaining. Rong Zhu and Koei Steele's my fight of the year currently. Alexander Topira dominating Koei Thickneys. It was good, but then you get into Wang Kong goes the distance. Tom Nolan goes the distance. Gabriel Santos and Jack Jenkins. It's the hometown guy losing. Kind of sad to see. I mean, Jake Matthews, Francisco Prado, not that entertaining. Jimmy Crute and Rodolfo Bellotto round one domination was entertaining. Then we're seeing Jimmy Crute gas out. Teixeira blitzing Tafa was entertaining, except for the fact I didn't pick him. Zhang Weili dominating Tatiana Suarez, kind of boring. And then DDP and Sean Strickland did not live up to the hype of their first matchup. So 5 out of 10 for me. DDP is currently number 7 in the men's pound for pound. I'm going to put him over Bilal Muhammad since this is now two title defenses over Adesanya and Sean Strickland. I'm not going to put him past Merab since I honestly think Merab has a bit better resume than DDP, although they're very close. And I mean, the pound for pound, I mean, there was a point where we didn't even know who to put as the number one pound for pound. You know, have Islam Makhachev, John Jones, Alex Pereira, Ilia Topuria, Rob Dovizioso, Dricus du Plessis. It is getting loaded. I'm so excited to see what is next. And as in terms of what is actually next, you know, next time up, you know, UFC Vegas 102 this upcoming Saturday, Valentine's Day weekend, I'll actually be watching our boy Jimmy fight. And after that, I'll be watching Gregory Rodriguez hopefully get into the rankings as he takes on Jared Cannonier. But that's going to be such a hit or miss fight for me. As for the next pay-per-view, you get Justin Gaethje and Dan Hooker, and you get Alex Pereira and Magomed Ankalaev. So the UFC has a lot of exciting stuff the rest of the year. But guys, that's all we got. That's all we got, guys. Super Bowl, UFC 312. I hate being such a negative Nancy, not living up to the hype. But honestly, when things are just that hyped in it, you know, they just can't always live up to expectations. But next time we talk, I got a movie review for you guys. We're going to be checking in with the NBA and NHL as they both head into their all-star breaks. And of course, UFC Vegas 102 official predictions. Stay groovy, stay classy, guys. As always, I'll catch you next time on the Surprise Jab Podcast.